The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So hello, everyone. It's really nice to be here. Tonight, what I'd like to talk to you about is stillness. Stillness and the cultivation of stillness. And the reason that I want to talk to you about it is I felt that I needed to think about it. My life has been very busy lately, and I found myself running. And feeling a need to return to silence and to stillness that was like a longing for me. Instead, I was wed to the tyranny of the to-do list and the tyranny of completing the to-do list and all of these shoulds sort of tied up in a mantle of goodness. Good is if I do everything I'm supposed to do. And so I was running like crazy to do everything that I was supposed to do. But this was not making me happy. And I heard myself say to my cousin, who is facing surgery for colon cancer, that he should get in touch with the stillness that is within him to counteract the anxiety and the fear that he was expressing, that if he could get that he had this stillness in him and that it would be a source of strength for him. And then I thought, what do you mean by that? Now, it was so easy to say to him, get in touch with your own stillness that is part of you, and it'll be a strength for you. But that wasn't so trivial in the end. And I thought, well, I need to think about that. So what is stillness? What is it really? And how do we cultivate it or call on it? What is this thing, this source in us? So ease, maybe. Yeah, that's probably true, that there's a certain amount of ease with stillness. You know, it doesn't feel like there's tension associated with stillness. It's just there. It's not like a mental arm wrestle, right? You don't think of a lot of energy when you think of stillness. You just think settling. Okay, if I settle too far, then aren't I just going to become lethargic, lazy, nothing's happening, I'm not going to get anything done? You know, there's this fear. It's a piece of judgment that goes against the desire to be still. Oh, this can't be a good thing. Somehow, it doesn't involve will. Somehow, it has to do with allowing. Just allowing. It isn't something we go chasing after, stillness. But there's a sense of it just being allowed to happen. So the Buddha said, I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering. Now, a lot of people interpret this to mean that Buddhism is all about suffering, which is a vast misinterpretation of what he actually said. What he said is that suffering exists and that we have to recognize what is suffering in life. He didn't say life is suffering, but that suffering exists and that the suffering arises out of our desire for things to be different than they are and the clinging to that desire for things to be different than they are, but that we can put an end to this. And that the way to end this is through the Eightfold Path. So the Eightfold Path are a set of clues about how we can take care of suffering in our lives. And this busyness generates a great deal of suffering in my life. So we have right view, seeing things as they really are. We have right intention, being dedicated to a skillful purpose. Right action, which is ethical behavior. Right speech, which is truth-telling, compassionate truth-telling. Right effort, that we actually put some energy into this. Right livelihood, which is choosing a way of making a living that is ethical and consistent with our practice. Mindfulness, being in the present moment, and concentration. So where is stillness? Well, stillness has a lot to do with concentration. It's different than concentration. Concentration is really focusing on something. But in order to do that, we have to be still. We have to know how to still all of the busyness and the moving around that our mind does and our bodies do and our perceptions of the world. Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Vietnamese master, Buddhist master, tells the story about resting in the river. And when he talks about a pebble that you throw into the river. And the pebble finds the shortest way and slowly just hits the water and sifts down to the bottom, sits on the bottom of the river and allows all the river to go past. The pebble doesn't exert any effort to sink to the bottom of the river. It simply falls. It takes the shortest path. It allows itself to fall to the bottom of the river. It isn't running after the bottom of the river. And when we meditate, we do a similar sort of thing. We allow ourselves to settle into the meditation. We don't exert a great deal of effort. We just allow it to happen. And this quality of allowing that settling is, I think, an important aspect of what it means to be still. So what it does is it allows us to come to a place of resting, but you know what? We don't have a lot of practice with resting. Oh, we may know how to take a nap. But resting is really not in our culture. The ability to just stop and say, I'm going to stop and rest here. And in a kind of equipoise place, say, this is enough. And yet one of our first instructions for meditating is take a comfortable but alert posture. A comfortable but alert posture. So it isn't about falling asleep when we rest. It's about resting in a place where there's not a lot of other stuff happening. And this is what makes it so essential to meditation, because if there's so much happening, if we're unable to simply let go and be right here in this moment, we can't be mindful. It's an essential part of mindfulness. The problem is we don't have a habit of resting. You know, so much of what we do in life is a habit, and we do not have a habit of resting. We have a habit of running. I got to go do this, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this. We're really good at that. So what Thich Nhat Hanh says is, the way to practice is to say, I have arrived, I am home, in the here and now. I am solid, I am free. In the ultimate, I dwell. To me, this really describes that stillness. I'm here, I'm solid, I'm free. That's the place where we can rest. So, in opposition to that is this poem he has called Going in Circles. Oh, you who are going in circles, please stop. What are you doing it for? I cannot be without going, because I don't know where to go. That's why I go in circles. Oh, you who are going in circles, please stop. But if I stop going, I'll stop being. Oh, my friend who is going in circles, you are not one with this crazy business of going in circles. You may enjoy going, but not going in circles. Where can I go? Go where you can find your beloved, where you can find yourself. If you're able to arrive someplace, then you can actually stop running. Just to come to this place. A friend of mine who was studying the hindrances said he was going to talk to me about doubt. And he said, you know, I don't have a problem with doubt because when I sit down to meditate, I have such strong intention. I am right there and I am determined to practice and there I am with it. Doubt doesn't ever enter the picture, but I have a lot of trouble with restlessness. So I said, so describe this restlessness to me. And he says, well, when I sit, you know, I know that I can concentrate really well and I can actually see and feel mental activity arise and pass away, even before the thought, just the energy of mental activity arising and passing away. I said to myself, this is quite amazing. This is real concentration. This is outstanding. How can this person be talking about restlessness if he can see that, can feel that kind of arising of mental activity and settling away? And it turned out that he felt that if he was seeing his thoughts, that this was restlessness. Whoa. This guy has a standard that is way up there. And as we were talking about it, I said, and so when you're sitting there being mindful, he said, no, I'm concentrating. I said, right, we're talking about mindfulness here. And concentration and mindfulness really go together. You know, you don't have one without the other is only part of the picture. So that when you're really concentrated, you need to be able to see whatever comes up. You're not trying to control it. You're just extremely alert. So the more concentrated you are, the more alert you are. And he said, oh, well, yeah. So I guess that the problem is, oh, he says, I just want it always to be the same way. And I said, oh, and if it isn't that way, then you think you're not doing it right. He said, yeah. And I said, well, it sounds like doubt to me. And he said, oh. It was like we have these ideas about how something should be. And we set it up, and then we don't allow ourselves to just be there because we have an idea about how it should be, right? And that's where he was stuck. He was stuck in this, oh, I'm restless because I'm actually noticing what's happening. Okay, something wrong with that. Now, most of us would be grateful to have that degree of concentration, that degree of stillness. Because in order to see that, you truly have to be very still. I remember when I went on my first week-long retreat, and I was probably 3 or 4 days into it, and all of a sudden there was this incredible, weird experience. And it was really quite troubling to me. It's as if everything just stopped. And at the end of the sitting, I went out to do my walking meditation, and I was really agitated. And all of a sudden, I realized it was the first time in my life I had actually felt calm. I mean, real calm, where everything just pauses. And it was so unfamiliar to me that it was frightening. Now, of course, all the agitation about what is it kind of blew it out of the water, so I lost it. But that was a real interesting thing for me to discover. And one of the really great things about it is now that I know about it, I know that it's possible to actually be calm, something I didn't know before. It was not in my experience. So I'm going to read you this poem by Marie Howe, and it's called Even If I Don't See It Again. Even if I don't see it again, nor ever feel it, I know it is. And that if once it hailed me, it ever does. And so it is myself I want to turn in that direction, not as toward a place, but as a tilting within myself, as one turns a mirror to flash the light to where it isn't. I was blinded like that, and swam in what shone at me, only able to endure it by being no one, and so specifically myself, I thought I'd die from being loved like that. Even if I don't see it again nor ever feel it, I know it is, and that if once it hailed me, it ever does. And so it is to myself I want to turn in that direction, not as toward a place, but it was a tilting within myself. As one turns a mirror to flash the light to where it isn't, I was blinded like that and swam in what shone at me, only able to endure it by being no one, and so specifically myself, I thought I'd die from being loved like that. I think that's the thing about the stillness that draws me, is that once you feel that stillness, you know, you can't unknow it. You know that it exists. And then you can find it again. And it doesn't have to be something that is a place. It's really just an allowing. It isn't something that I went toward. It was something I was drawn toward. And it's a gift and a blessing. You know, it's a blessing not only to us, but to those around us, to be able to get to that place of stillness when we're not rushing to make something happen. This is a little book called The Power of Kindness, and I pick this up every once in a while and read something out of it. And today I found this really extraordinary thing. So this book is by Piero Ferrucci, and he's an Italian psychosynthesis psychologist. And he talks about a violin. He says, although I'm not a musician, I once had the opportunity to hold in my hands an exquisitely made violin dating to the 18th century. What amazed me, even more than its harmonious lines or the beautiful grain of its wood, was that holding it, I could feel it vibrate. It was not an inert object. It resonated with the various sounds that happened to resonate around it. Another violin, a tram passing in the street, a human voice. If you hold an ordinary factory-made violin, that just does not happen. There can be hundreds of sounds around it, and the violin remains numb. In order to obtain the fine sensitivity and extraordinary resonance of the old violin, the makers had to have an exceptional knowledge of wood and its seasoning, and they were endowed with the talent of cutting the wood and furnishing the instrument. This marvelous responsiveness is an active virtue. It is the capacity of the violin to enter into resonance, and it goes hand in hand with its capacity to create sound of extraordinary quality. Music with a soul, able to move and to inspire. We humans are, or at least can be, like that violin. Since birth, we've been able to resonate with other human beings. It's kind of a remarkable statement. Do you ever think of yourself like a fine violin that resonates with somebody opposite you? Well, the truth is, if you're buzzing and generating so much energy, running in circles, and accomplishing all the things that you have to accomplish, you are not still enough to notice it. So he says further, now I imagine a relationship, any relationship, in its pure state. Let us imagine it is stripped of judgment, spite, comparison, and so on. We find ourselves in front of the other without screen or defense. Then we are immediately able to resonate. Freed of the ballast, we feel lighter. We forget our hurry. We are free. Then empathy is possible, and so too is knowledge. If you and I are open to each other without barriers between us, then I feel your feelings, and you feel mine. I feel understood by you, and you by me. I feel... if you are suffering, I want your suffering to end. And if I am suffering, I know you will support me. If you are happy, I am too. And if things are going well for me, I know you are pleased. And maybe nothing more is needed. Now, the reason this appeals to me is that I think it's also part of that central desire to be still. that in order to actually resonate with the people that are around us, to be in touch with that connection that we have with other people, we sometimes have to stop making so much noise. Just making so much noise. The noise of our stories, the noise of our running in place, the noise of, I've got to think about this. I can't really listen to you because I'm thinking about what I have to tell you next. I'm making mental lists. All of this is noise. There was a time when I had my stereo connected to a light switch that when I walked through the front door, I could flip the switch and the stereo would be on. And it was on in my house all the time. I almost find that inconceivable now. Now we live out at the end of a dirt road and out in the country, and it's very, very quiet. And when I listen to music, it's because I specifically want to listen to the music. It isn't something that fills all the spaces. And I think that's part of what we do. It's almost as if we're afraid of stillness. We have to fill it up with stuff. You know, we have noise, we have activities, we have beliefs. And that noise is getting in the way. So it isn't that I'm telling you not to pay attention to any of this. My husband will be the first one to tell you that I'm kind of I have a lot of busyness in my life. I have this I'm going to do, and this I'm going to do, and this I'm going to do. But what I'm beginning to recognize is that there comes a time when you have to step back from that and pay attention to your life. And that in the way to pay attention to your life, you have to stop. You have to stop, slow down, and reach some degree of stillness. This is one of the reasons that we go on retreat. One of the things that I noticed, I've done a couple of 1 month retreats, and I go to Spirit Rock where they have the 2 months in a row, and I always go in the second month because all those people who've been sitting for the first month that are staying for the second month are very slow. They've become very still. And by coming in and opening myself to that energy, I drop in really fast compared to how I would do on my own. By opening myself up to their resonance, I slow down faster. I'm not going to think too much about that. But what I also notice is that I never catch up. That is, you can tell when you're on retreat with people, those people who are really settling in, because they develop a great presence and stillness about them. And in 1 month, I don't catch up to those people who have done 2 months. In the sense that I can see, I can feel their energy, very deep energy. And I still have this slight buzz that kind of slows down. And the value of that is in seeing what is really true. Because there's less interference. You know, it's like listening to the radio and having a clear signal versus a staticky signal. It comes through much clearer, much cleaner. And we can only do that in the realm of stillness. I have another poem for you here. This one is by Holly Hughes, if I can find it. It's called The Mind Wanting More. Only a beige slat of sun above the horizon, like a shade pulled not quite down, otherwise clouds. Sea rippled here and there, birds reluctant to fly. The mind wants a shaft of sun to stir the gray porridge of clouds, an osprey to stitch the sea to sky with its barred wings, some dramatic music perhaps, a symphony, a Chinese gong. But the mind always wants more than it has. One more bright day of sun, one more clear night in bed. With the moon, one more hour to get the words right, one more chance for the heart in hiding to emerge from its thicket in dried grasses, as if this quiet day with its tentative light weren't enough, as if joy weren't strewn all around. Now, this speaks to me because it has to do with this tendency for us to say, this is not enough. This is not enough. There has to be more. It would be a little better if it was like this. Just a little better if it was like this. If I didn't notice my thoughts and only noticed the arising of the mental energy, it would be better. No, it isn't better. This is the comparing mind that is stirring everything up all the time. I remember my stepchildren used to tell me that they could do homework and watch television at the same time because they were more mentally agile than I. And that if I weren't so old, I'd be able to do this too. And you know, there was a certain time when I thought multitasking held a very high value for me. I could do this at the same time I was doing that. And I could make phone calls and work on the computer. And after meditating for a while, I realized what was actually happening was not doing two things at once, but I was fast switching, you know? I'd be doing this and going this and doing this. And what happens to all the stuff in between when you're switching? Because that's what you're doing. You're going this and this and this and this and this. So that in-between space becomes very interesting to me. So if we're looking at stillness, where do we find it? How do we practice in bringing up the stillness? Well, one way is when we breathe, when we follow our breath, to notice what happens between the end of the out-breath and the beginning of the next in-breath. There's a space in there. Can you notice that space? What's in that space? That space is deep, deep stillness. But mostly we just pass right over it. You know? Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, without even noticing that place in between. One of the things that is true about stillness is that there is, in fact, a great deal of strength and vitality in stillness. It's actually a gathering of energy. Nana Sampano was a Thai master, and he says, when the mind is still, it gains inner strength, regardless of how much or how little knowledge it has. No trouble or confusion results because the mind has its footing. It's secure, calm, peaceful within itself, all because of the stillness, which is a gathering of energy. So we don't often think about stillness as a gathering of energy, but it's actually quite an energetic state. It's really paying attention to some very core of our existence, this stillness that we can settle into. So how do we do it? There's breath awareness, where we follow the breath in and out. This allows us to train following the breath and following what's really happening, and to look at that space in between breaths to really notice it. There's choiceless awareness, you may have heard of that, where you're not so much following the breath, but you're following whatever comes, whatever it is, where you're not directing your attention, but whatever shows itself, you're totally present for it. In the same way that you resonate with other people by being totally present for them. Totally present. Being totally present for the moment, or whatever arises, is what we call choiceless awareness. And it's the stillness that happens when nothing is happening. And we are so unused to being comfortable when nothing is happening. Somehow that sounds almost negative, nothing is happening. But right there is a very important place. And maybe you've felt that for just a few minutes. You know? Where you let out a breath and there is nothing in the way and nothing that calls you away from the moment, nothing that drags you into another time, and you're totally present right there, and there's a great calm, and you notice that, and you say, wow. And then your mind starts churning up when you're explaining why it's happening, and you're applying meaning to it, and you've got all this other stuff happening. So one of the things I noticed when I meditated is that I'm a very verbal person. And so I discovered that when I had a thought, I was busy putting it into a sentence. Okay, so something arises. And I noticed there were two things that happened. There was the thought, and there was the putting it into a sentence. It was as if I couldn't know it until I put it into words. So then I began paying very close attention to my thoughts and refusing to mentally repeat it, which is what was happening. The thought would arise, and then it was like, oh, I got to remember that thought. You know, I'm going to say it over again. And I noticed there were each thought was happening twice. So then I would remind myself that I could know something without putting it in a sentence, without putting it into words. Now, this may sound like a mental trick or a lot of mental activity, but what I was really trying to do was get my mind to be still, to allow the thoughts to rise, to know the thought without repeating it. It was a real surprise to me that I did this. So for a long time, that's what I did when I meditated, was practice not repeating my thoughts. So it doesn't have to be only on the cushion where this happens. A friend of mine once said to me, you know, one good thing about being a meditator is you always have something to do. That's another one you don't want to think too much about. But what she was referring to was that it happened that she was going to have to wait for something. And she said, but that's really easy because I can just close my eyes and wait. And I don't pay attention to the waiting part of it. I'm just meditating. Well, we can do that once we know what stillness feels like. We can find stillness for that long in that amount of time just by allowing it to happen. We're standing in line. The line's not moving. Take a breath just for a moment. Nothing's happening. And it's okay. Just for a moment, nothing's happening. Or we're walking along on a path and suddenly we notice the dawn or the sunrise. Or we stand at the edge on the beach and we notice the ocean and how deep and infinite it is. And just for a moment, we're still. And we've stopped. And we're not trying to see how far down the beach we can go, or how fast we can run, or how slow we can walk. We're not trying to do anything, but just rest right there, just for a moment. I think this practice of resting in the moment is one of the most important gifts we can give to ourselves and to all the people around us. And it has nothing to do with abdicating our responsibilities. It has only to do with being here. Let's see if I have that. What the Living Do. This is a poem by Marie Howe. Johnny, the kitchen sink has been clogged for days. Some utensil probably fell down there. and the Drano won't work but smells dangerous, and the crusty dishes have piled up waiting for the plumber I still haven't called. This is the everyday we spoke of. It's winter again, the sky is a deep, headstrong blue, and the sunlight pours through the open living room windows because the heat's on too high in here and I can't turn it off. For weeks now, driving or dropping a bag of groceries in the street, the bag breaking, I've been thinking, this is what the living do. And yesterday, hurrying along those wobbly bricks in the Cambridge sidewalk, spilling my coffee down my wrist and sleeve, I thought it again, and again later when buying a hairbrush. This is it. Parking, slamming the car door shut in the cold, what you called that yearning. What you finally gave up. We want the spring to come and the winter to pass. We want whoever to call or not call, a letter, a kiss. We want more and more, and then more of it. But there are moments walking when I catch a glimpse of myself in the window glass, say the window of the corner video store, and I'm gripped by a cherishing so deep for my own blowing hair, chapped face and unbuttoned coat, that I'm speechless. I am living. I remember you. You know, so much of the busyness is about not realizing that we're living. We're living. We're right here in the moment. And the only way to slow down is to actually occasionally stop. So it's not about the feeling or the mood. It's not about saying, okay, I'm a relaxed now. It's really about alertness. It's about really seeing what's happening when we're stopped, when we stop trying to make other things happen. It's just seeing what's actually happening. One thing that happens is we develop the capacity to know when nothing further furthers. We're pushing along, pushing along. I have this thing I want to have happen. And so this happened to me this week. I had somebody wanted me to do something, and I didn't want to do it. And so we started doing this, getting this in this argument back and forth. And she would present her point of view, and I would present my point of view, and then she would present her point of view, and I present. Okay. At a certain point, I realized it was already done. And all I was doing was presenting my point of view, but I was not going to affect the outcome. And I was still trying to make it happen. You know, this ability to say, okay, that's it. I don't have to keep on in this habit. To recognize that it's a habit, a way of thinking, a way of proceeding, and stop. Oh, what's the horrible thing that's going to happen if I stop? Sometimes we keep fighting after the election is over, you know, still making my point, this should happen, right? So we have to ask ourselves, what is at stake? What is at stake that makes me want to continue this course, go this place, go this way, go this speed? What's at stake? Do I have to do it? What are the consequences if it doesn't happen? Even if I found myself talking to somebody who was telling a story that I knew more about, and I kept thinking, she's saying it wrong, she's saying it wrong, she's not saying the right thing, and I kept wanting to correct her. And then I realized it didn't matter, that what she was saying about whatever had happened didn't affect the people involved. And if in Florida they have the wrong story, it really doesn't make any difference. And here I was, trying to correct her story over and over again, and not realizing that I was just pushing my point of view. And it really wasn't necessary. You know, what's at stake? Sometimes we think something's at stake that is not, and we don't know how to let go of it, let go of the pushing. But when we stop trying to protect our point of view, we can come back to our heart. We can just come back to this place where what's important is being here. It's not necessarily changing the world. That we change the world by being present right here in this moment. It's as if we've been in the hot sun and we step under an awning and we're sheltered from the sun and it's all cool and there's no rain under this awning. We're just stepping under the awning. The same thing holds true with this, a mind that is steady, that has an inner foundation of stillness, which is a kind of resilience, where we become unflappable. We're not pushed off course by everything that happens, because we have an ability to lock into this place of stillness, because we've practiced being in that place. And you go, oh, it's okay, right here. When the mind is centered, it's free from turmoil and confusion, like a person who has finished his work. The mind is refreshed. It's steady, still, and energetic. And it's only in these moments that reality really lives. Only right here, right now. I have arrived, I am home, in the here and now. I am solid, I am free. In the ultimate, I dwell. So this from Wendell Berry. When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. May you all grow still. Thank you. So does anybody have any comments? Suggestions? Objections?
So how is it to get back to the business? Like, you talk about being busy and slowing down. How about the reverse journey?
So it's actually easier than you might think. It's a lot harder to stop than to restart, for me anyway. There are kind of two things. There is the stopping in our everyday life as we go about our lives. And that stopping is short. Right? It's just stopping here, taking a breath, saying, okay, I need a little balance. That's pretty short term. And maybe it lasts a minute. Maybe it lasts as long as an hour. God forbid it should last a whole hour. And then you go back to it. But what happens by breaking that running in a circle, when I come back, I find that I'm much more energetic because I'm not expending so much energy in effort. You know, this one of the things that happens when we find ourselves spinning. It's like a car that gets stuck on the beach. You have a couple of different options. One is you can get in, you can kind of pump the gas, and you think that'll work if you're on a hard surface and you just have a bump to get over. It's just a little bump. But when you're in the sand, you just keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And so then you have to arrive at a different strategy for getting off the beach, usually involving more people than you. But you need to you need to go a little forward, a little back. You have to rock out of it, right? You have to find a way to just not keep spinning in circles. And so the stopping and taking a breath and looking at just getting still is like that. It's saying, okay, I'm going to stop spinning my wheels in the sand. So that when I then go back to the process, I actually have a chance of moving the car off the beach. It's that kind of thing. The other way is if you go on an extended retreat, which is really stopping and slowing down, depending on what happens in the retreat, it takes a longer time to come back to full speed. But what is also true is that as a consequence of that slowing down, I am much more sensitive and resonant in the sense of the violin resonance with what's happening in my life. And what comes back is cleaner. I'm not carrying so much so much he said, she said kind of baggage. You know, all that stuff that we start accumulating like mud on a car. You get it all rinsed off, and then it moves a little smoother through the down the road. Does that answer your question? It isn't that by stopping, you cease being an effective person. I think the opposite is true. But it also is not laying down and going to sleep. There's a large part of being alert to the moment that is very important. Okay? Any other thoughts?
I struggle with a problem with fatigue, and my body is so tired, yet my mind is doing the racing thing, and I just... Unless I can actually fall asleep, I feel I just can't get there to that. I have a very difficult time getting to that still point of throttling back and just finding that calm alertness. A lot of times I just feel like I'm either stuck in the fog and just can't think straight, or I'm going 1,000 miles an hour going nowhere. So to address the fatigue part of it, you talk about being alert. I have trouble getting there. I can get there occasionally, but it doesn't last. It's very fleeting. Any thoughts on working with that?
Well, you know, I've gone through times when I've been probably not chronic fatigue, but where I'm just fatigued. You know, you just plain are out of energy. But you need to keep moving, because there are things that you have to do to make your life work. And I think the thing that is really important is in the realm of intention and expectation. What would it look like for you to be able to find a place of rest? When you're really tired, you're sort of focused on dragging all of that tiredness around with you, and it's very difficult to really rest because you're so tired. And you know, it's kind of a paradox. It's a paradox, and somehow there has to be a piece of permission about that tiredness. You know? I'm just tired. So that the stopping in this case is allowing what is true to be true. And that's why I say it's the efforting that's not so important. It's more about allowing. So that if you can allow yourself to actually be tired, it isn't because there's something wrong with you, it's because it's true. Tired. And the tiredness is not you. The tiredness is over here next to you. You can put your arm around it. Say, here's the tiredness. I got my arm around the tiredness here. Hello, tiredness. So you acknowledge the tiredness. You see it, but it isn't you. So that you don't identify with the tiredness, but neither do you deny that it's there. And I think if you can do that, if you can disidentify with it, but see it and allow it to be present, that you can find some stillness. When I say stillness, it's not about becoming rested. It's about resting. And inherent in that is not fighting or pushing away or denying. It's accepting and allowing it to be true. So that's what I can offer you. I think this issue of allowing oneself to feel what one feels is a place that we all get kind of tripped up on. You know, I shouldn't feel this way, and therefore we don't allow ourselves to feel the way we actually feel. It doesn't mean that we have to incorporate that feeling into who we are. It's a feeling. No, it exists in the same way that a cold exists or joy exists. You know, we also have a tendency when we're really happy to give ourselves a lot of credit for that. and to not give ourselves credit for just being who we really are. Boy, we have a lot of exciting things going on outside with all these sirens. We could all make up stories about it. That would be fun. Well, I think we should allow ourselves to go home. Thank you for listening. May you all be happy. May you find stillness. Thank you.